Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network. You're listening to the newchurches.com Q&A podcast. New Churches is an online hub for the mission of church multiplication. Here you'll find the resources and training you need to get started, as well as a community of church planting and multi-site experts to help you thrive. My name is Daniel Lim, and I'm here with Ed Stetzer.
You would think in the biggest global crisis of our lifetime that Daniel M. could change the introduction just a little bit, just to maybe even acknowledge the moment we're in doesn't change the mission we're on. But hey, you know, I'm gonna let it be.
I mean, the content of these episodes have been addressing it, so.
Yes, and the content is timeless, we should say. It is timeless. So, you know, whenever you're listening to this, it will be helpful to you, so.
Yeah. All right. Well, today we have a question from Ezra. And Ezra was, well, actually, here it is. No, I don't need to do any more preamble. Here it is. Will this COVID-19 season change the way that we plant churches? All right. So that's kind of the first portion of the question. Will this COVID-19 season change the way that we plant churches? And are church plants or more established churches generally better suited for times like this?
And this is from Ezra Beyer. I saw it on the internet as well. So thank you, Ezra, for your question. So here's the thing. I think actually church plants are maybe better suited than established churches, depending upon the size of the established church. So part of the reality is, and I don't know where Ezra is. Let's click on, I saw this tweet, so I'm clicking to see where Ezra is located. Oh, he's got a book called What's the Point? Ezra Beyer. Let's see, themondaychristian.com. He's in Idaho. Very cool. Here's what I would say. I think that the ability to gather in for smaller churches and church plants, which tend to be smaller churches, is actually pretty wide open. And so, for example, if I were planting a church now, we're recording this early summer, and if I were probably trying to work towards a first public gathering, a launch, going public in, August or September, first of all, my timing might just be just right. Matter of fact, if I was planning to start in May, I might right now be saying, I think I'll start public worship in September or late August, because probably, and we don't know for sure, and I'm not a doctor, and I'm not Dr. Fauci, though that's my goal right now, is to be as cool as Dr. Fauci. Probably we'll be able to have groups. So let's say a group of 100, you have a public launch, or 200, and you spread people out, you follow all guidelines, social distancing. I think ultimately, you're going to have more likelihood to be able to get a space, meet in it. Let's say, for example, are schools going to be renting to churches again? If schools are open in the fall, there's a good chance they will. There might again be some more stringent guidelines. But so I think for church plants, I would be focusing on the development of small groups, depending upon what state you're in, how open you're in. They might be meeting online. They might be meeting in person. We're answering questions, and I don't know, Daniel, in Canada, but I know in the U.S., it's kind of a patchwork. So, and it may be the same. Maybe Alberta is different than Quebec in openness to what you can do. Tell me a little more about that.
Yeah, the provinces are all, and that's because COVID-19 is different and the response and testing, every province has kind of taken a different approach to it. So,
yeah, because I mean, I've Red Deer is different, Quebec, is different than Toronto. So, it's a whole different worlds.
Exactly. And I heard that Quebec was actually going to be opening up their schools.
I think there's multiple reasons that are different than that. For example, particularly, a lot of children in school come from socioeconomic distressed locations, and this becomes, for a lot of our listeners, maybe, because they got podcasts or listening on their iPhone, maybe it doesn't seem as significant, but if you're don't have access to technology, parts of Quebec are poorer than more affluent parts of Quebec. I think you will see schools being a very high priority to get back. So that could impact. Matter of fact, I think that's where a lot of churches need to look, is when schools are meeting and in session, I think you'll begin to see more churches meeting and in session. The weird thing is it's over the summer, so it's kind of hard to do that. So I think for Ezra, I think green lights here. And I wouldn't run away from the opportunity to continue to build through disciple making and evangelism, to disciple and evangelize into existence a church that maybe begins public gathering in the fall, would be my guess.
Yeah, and that's where it's interesting, right? Because the two-part question, we started with the latter half, which is, are church plants or more established churches better suited for times like this? On the one hand, the church plants who are typically smaller, and I mean, the average size of a church in both the U.S. and Canada is quite small. So
yeah, under 100 after the fourth year is the typical church plant, yeah. Oh, wait, no, the new data had it over 100 after the fourth year, just slightly over 100. But yeah, but still,
okay,
you know, if church plants by 4 years in, most of the people who listen to the podcast probably aren't, by the time they get to the fourth year, they're thinking themselves an established church.
Yeah, yeah. So when you think about that in terms of gathering wise, perhaps church plants are better suited toward that end. But financially speaking, I mean, I wonder if established churches would actually be better suited for times like this.
Well, I think, you know, so financially, yeah, I guess I was thinking in terms of mission, because that's what I do, Daniel. Mm-hmm. I think in terms of mission first. So it's a fair question. So I guess a lot of it depends upon what stage you're in. So if you had, like, let's say Ezra has a core or a launch team, whatever, you know, paradigm, your language you're using, that core is probably pretty committed. And, you know, if you've got 20, mm-hmm. 30 people, they're probably giving, you've probably set up online giving. And you're relying on that. Now, I know that like national organizations, several, both US and Canada, you know, they're actually, you know, funds are, you know, drying up everywhere. But what a lot of them are doing, I was talking to a Pentecostal denomination, they said, we're prioritizing the planters we have in the field. We've told everyone else we can't fund them right now. And so, so I think that if
Ezra's like for new launches,
for church plants. In other words, in this case, this Pentecostal denomination is saying we don't have any more money, and so we're going to prioritize people we've already committed to, which to me makes some sense. And so basically, a lot of other people are on pause. They, at least from the financial perspective, you know, I got turned down by my denomination, planted a church anyway, and there's a lot of opportunities to still do that if you can, you know, find some bivocational connection. Actually. Even oddly enough, you know, this very generous by historic governmental standards, both in the U.S. and Canada, unemployment, we use the unemployment insurance, but the way it's funded now is different. I mean, that could be an opportunity for people to actually say, you know, I've been thinking about planting a church. I've been, you know, working as a whatever, and now I've got a freedom to do that. You know, Charlie Dates, I was talking to him. He's a pastor in the city of Chicago. At a Progressive Baptist Church, a very historic African-American church. And they started in the Spanish flu epidemic in the middle of it. So okay. I think you are going to see some, but back to your financial question. So I think probably current existing church plants, unless they're, you know, partner churches all bail, are at a decent place to continue to move forward to launch. So that's the part, the finances. Small established churches, I think, are probably worse off. I think mid-sized and larger who have prioritized online giving, I think they're different. Here's what I would say too. The financial crunch is still coming. You know, mass unemployment is before us. And so, you know, I do think we've got to be sober-minded that there are some real financial challenges coming very soon. You know, because again, even like say online giving has sort of protected you from the immediate fall off. You know, we saw 11% of churches in our study in partnership with Exponential, 11% of churches experienced more than a 50% decline, mostly smaller, mostly rural or urban, or disproportionately rural or urban. It's that mid-sized and larger established church is doing fine. I think until the unemployment, then we're going to have to reset the finances until unemployment rates catch up with giving. But I, for me, I tend to think church plants who are already in process, who have a core group, will be generally okay. We can't make, you know, broad sweeping such claims because everything's different. And you have, you know, I planted a church in Pennsylvania years ago, and we had planned to start to build a building. We were building an additional, adding on to and renovating a facility that we had acquired. And then a hurricane hit South Carolina. This was like years ago, Hurricane Hugo, I think it was. And so pretty much all the teams that we had recruited, it just happened to be coincidental or maybe some partnership, I don't remember. But all the teams we had recruited were from South Carolina, and now they couldn't come. And so the end result is that, you know, I'm sitting on a half built building, you know, a half construction. And you had to restart in a sense. I had to, you know, let's all take a deep breath. The core team and some of our initial, I think we had already launched, this was a while ago, but everyone pitched in and we did renovation and we had to finish what we started, but we did it differently. That may be the case with a lot of church planters.
No, that's good. So we'll continue this discussion just after a quick word from our sponsor for today. If you're preparing to launch a new church or campus in the upcoming months, I recommend connecting with Portable Church Industries. This team has been around for over 25 years and continues to be the pioneer in creating customized and engaging environments in rented venues with systems that significantly increase volunteer retention. They can help with everything from AVL, kids ministry, lobby spaces, signage, storage, and everything in between. Starting with your vision, they'll equip you with everything needed to thrive in rented spaces. Check out their site at portablechurch.com/lifeway and talk to an expert today. All right, Ed. So it's interesting because when we begin gathering again, and several states and provinces are, you know, they've released their reopening plan, and there's that sense of smaller gatherings likely being the first, really the first thing that's allowed, right? So the thing that I'm wrestling with right now, and that's that whole dual part of church plants and established churches. All right, so one of our campuses, they average
at your church in Edmonton?
Yeah. My church in Edmonton, one of our campuses, they average around 200 people about a weekend, two to 250 per weekend, about 100 to 125-ish per service. Another one of our campuses, they range about 200 to 300 per service. And then our largest campus, I mean, we're ranging between 600 to 1,000 per service. So it's interesting. So even for us, we see our smaller campuses as being the first ones likely that are going to be able to begin gathering. But I guess the question that we're wrestling with is, okay, what about the larger campus? So that's where it's interesting when you look at church plants and established churches and which are better generally suited. There are really, in a sense, strengths and growth opportunities on the both sides.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that this also too, you know, now, you know, we're in late May, we're beginning to see the impact of some states or provinces being more open or less open. And I think one of the things you're going to see is that smaller sized church, ironically, during the dance. Now, I do want to encourage people. We did a whole, I guess we can put this in the show notes. So I did a whole thing on the hammer and the dance with Josh Laxton on my team, about how to, you know, go. It's going to be kind of accordion for a while, I think. Like, for example, we've got in some states, you've got capacity limits. So you can have 25% or 50% or 75% your seating capacity. And we actually created a little chart how to do those things. But then, you know, what happens is the hammer comes back, boom, and you're back down to, because there's a flare up, you're back down to groups of 25. So how do you go back and forth? Mm-hmm. That's going to be our life for a few months, hopefully not for years, but for a few months. But I do think there's more flexibility for the church under 200 right now. And we know some churches are actually, some larger churches are actually creating congregations that meet. This is, I've only heard a few, but like, so we can't meet together. So our congregation of 200 will meet here and another 200 will meet here. The challenge is when you start getting congregations of 1,000 or more, which is much less common in Canada and still uncommon in the U.S. I mean, most churches, the typical church in the U.S. and Canada is under 100 in attendance. Mm-hmm. There's going to be more freedom for there and less freedom for larger churches for a while. Again, it's not going to be this way forever, but it certainly is this way right now.
Yeah. So just to finish off the podcast, then how do you see COVID-19 change the way that we're planning churches in the next several months?
In the next several months, some of which are addressed, I think everything will be in core group stage. And I think part of the challenge too is how do I do, you know, this is all new. You know, think about how you and I would build relationships with people, right? I'd go out, I'd meet people. I mean, So now it's kind of like, though, you know, I slide over into their DMs. Hey, you know, it's, you know, I saw you on Instagram. That just creeps everybody out. So I think the challenge here is if you are at zero, you know, the very beginning core development kind of conversation stage, I think you're either stuck for a little while or on pause. You can do online interaction. I think if you're at the 20 stage or the 25 stage and you have some core groups, you can actually work with them to engage their friends, to answer questions. I would keep developing disciples electronically. And then I'd try to meet in small groups. And then I would, you know, over the next few months, I'd look towards the fall to begin some form of public worship in a socially distanced, responsible way.
Yeah, I love that, Ed. I love that because you didn't say stop. You didn't say stop.
I don't
stop.
Think there's any. Here's why I would say no. It's even tricky. Even the one place where I think that one denomination, I think others are following suit. I mentioned that Pentecostal denomination. I think that funding may stop, but the mission doesn't necessarily stop. We need to keep moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We the week that everything shut down and the border shut down between US and Canada, and, you know, everyone, this was about mid-March, right? Or a little bit toward the end of mid to end of March, we were bringing in a pastor for our Arabic congregation. And we were like, it was a long process of immigration and interviewing and all that stuff. He's from Egypt. And we finally brought him in. And the day after he landed, the border shut down.
Oh, wow.
So for this guy, I mean, literally, I mean, he's a part of our staff team and we're building into him and all this stuff. But he has yet to meet the entire congregation in person. So for his entire first month and, you know, couple months, he's literally just Zooming and connecting and doing phone calls with the congregation. And what I love about him, his name is Pastor Nabil, is that he is not, I mean, obviously there's discouraging moments, but he is not letting this stop the mission.
Wow.
Stop the mission in reaching the Muslims in our city and reaching the Arabic speaking in our city for Christ.
That's so awesome. That's so, and I think that's for all of us. Again, for me, again, I didn't plant a church in the pandemic, but you know, when I was turned down by my denomination planting our first church, I got a job as a contractor and, you know, started planting, raised some money, had some funds, started blowing insulation and renovating houses and planted a church. And so I would say that I think people are super open now. Don't let this be a time when we don't show and share the love of Jesus. Let's not be on pause. Let's be on mission.
Love it. Love it. Well, thanks again for listening into the podcast and we'll catch you next time.